Blog Talk Radio.
Do exactly as you're told and no one gets hurt. Do you understand?
Good evening, my Facebook followers, Twitter followers, and Voicebow followers. I want to let you know to tune in to Speak Your Mind Radio in conjunction with Carson's Corner and J. Ray Radio tomorrow night on Blog Talk Radio at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 5 Central, 4 p.m. Mountain, and 3 p.m. Pacific. To hear two family stories that is going to infuriate you, educate you, and make you question many things. In our first hour, our guest will be Stacy White, the sister-in-law of Tabitha Lynn Franklin. Tabitha, known as Tabby, has three children who have wakened four Christmases now in a row. This year will make five without their mother. Tabby went missing on August 13, 2009. She was last seen by her abusive ex-boyfriend, Chris Poor Merrill, who made a statement via telephone to Randy Frost, who was a lead detective, that he picked Tabby up from a friend's house, which was never searched, and took her to his business that wasn't searched until 3 months after Tabby went missing in Hueytown, Alabama. And when he returned from doing some errands, Tabitha was gone. When asked to come into the sheriff's office to make a formal statement, he refused, stating he was hiring a lawyer. To this day, Chris has not been questioned, and Stacy will tell us about her journey in fighting to find her sister-in-law and bring in the person responsible for her disappearance to justice. In the second hour, we will be joined by the parents of Phoenix Colden. Now, back in December of 2011, two African-American women with beautiful, bright faces and smiles went missing only 9 days apart. One was Phoenix Colden from Spanish Lake in St. Louis County, Missouri, on December 18, 2011. And then Stacy English from Atlanta, Georgia, on December 26 of the same year, whose body was found several weeks later. The media did report a possible connection between Phoenix and Stacy English, because in both cases, their cars were found with the engine still running. Also in both cases, the investigation was slowed down because the cars the women were driving had been impounded, a fact that neither police department realized until several days into the investigations. The similarities with these two cases in some eyes may show some signs of Phoenix possibly being grabbed for the use of human and sex trafficking or the drug trade. However, the Coldens still preferred not to link their daughter to the disappearance and death of Stacy English, and they do have a strong, firm belief, as well as I do, that Phoenix is still alive and is not being allowed to contact them or to come home. So please, again, join us tomorrow night on Blog Talk Radio, and the link will be in the description below.
And you are listening to a very special edition of Carson's Corner in conjunction with Speak Your Mind Radio. My name is Bob Carson, and the description you just heard accurately reflects what we're going to have on the show here tonight, a very, very special, very important edition of Carson's Corner. And we're going to bring on this evening's co-host right now, the host of Speak Your Mind Radio, Mr. David Levitt. David, how are you?
I'm doing good. Okay, well, first thing I want to get out there is the most important thing in this case, and is about the reward that is out there. There is currently a $15,000 reward for leading to the arrest and conviction of who did this to Tabitha, and you can call anonymously. So if you, and some tips have come in. In the past year, some tests have come in, but, you know, they've been let up on. But you can call anonymously if you're afraid, you're in fear that, you know, something will happen to you. You can call anonymously, and that number is 205-254-7777. And also I want to be touching a little bit basis on tonight, and when Stacy comes in, we'll talk a little bit about that. But there is a website that's on Facebook to help families of the missing with resources, and it's called Tabby's Tears. And I will post that in the chat for people to actually check out and go to like that Facebook page. And she will also, when she comes on, she'll be talking about that. So if we can, now I'm going to go over with the facts, but the facts are in this, actually this timeline that I created for Tabitha Franklin. So if you can go ahead and play that, Bob, and then we'll bring in Stacy.
Okay, no problem. We're going to play you a timeline of the Tabitha Franklin case right now, and this should familiarize everybody out there with the facts of this case. Yep. So here it is.
Tabitha Lynn Franklin is a 29-year-old mother of three who has been missing since August 13, 2009. She was last seen wearing a black dress, waiting for a ride. The family later found out that Tabby's abusive ex-boyfriend said he picked her up from the area she was in and drove her to his place of business in Birmingham, Alabama, where he dropped her off. A few weeks later, after she went missing, police questioned him, and then he retained a lawyer when they wanted to further question him further, and then he moved to Illinois. Then he changed his name to Chris Poor Merrill, that's M-E-R-R-E-L-L, and Poor was spelled with P-O-O-R-E. And Stacy Darden is a sister-in-law of Tabitha Lynn Franklin. She has known her for over 10 years and has been married to Tabby's younger brother for 6 years. Tabitha has three children who are now 14, 12, and 10. And the mother, Robin, knows Chris did something with Tabitha, her daughter, because she was on the phone with her the night she went missing. Tabby told her everything that was going on, and that she knew Chris was going to kill her, and that she wanted to protect her children because he threatened to get her kids if she didn't get in his car with him. And the Coleman Sheriff's Department is the ones that are investigating this case, and still to this day, he's only been questioned that once. And this recording of him admitting to having Tabby's things, the police told her to keep it from the public. Well, she's not keeping it from the public.
Hey, is Chris there? Hey, Chris. This is Shelly from Florida.
Who?
Shelly from Florida.
Florida?
Yeah, Tabby's cousin.
Okay. How are you?
I'm okay. I was just wondering, Doc had said something that you had some clothes of hers still. You know she's been missing for nearly 3 months.
Who told you that?
Doc. And so I was just wondering if I could get those clothes back from you. For sentimental reasons, you know.
I understand, yeah, I understand. Yeah.
Okay, great. I'm going to be up in Birmingham probably in a week. Can I reach you at this number and then you meet?
I'm going to give them to a neutral party.
That was Doc. Oh, okay, that's great.
It's totally crazy. I don't know why everyone automatically assumes things as f***ed up as they do.
What are you talking about?
I was talking about your Tabitha and everyone assuming that had something to do with it. That she disappeared or something.
They say you got something to do with it?
That's the way, that's the impression of
it. Oh, okay. Well, that's not what I've heard. They just said that she's been missing and that she's on drugs real bad. So,
yeah.
Huh?
What's your name?
Shelly. I'm from Florida.
Okay, why did you withhold your phone number?
Because my phone was blocked automatically. Anywhere I call.
Next time you call me, don't withhold your phone number.
Okay, that's fine. Would you like my number?
No, that's fine.
I I can give it to you and if you call me back or something if you want.
Well, yeah, let's do that.
Okay.
Are you her cousin, you said?
Yes. On her Aunt Kathy's side.
Sorry?
On her Aunt Kathy's side. But, yeah, so you're going to give it to her cousin to a mutual party so we could get them?
Yeah.
It's just basically for sentimental, you know, reasons.
A lot of her pictures, too, so I mean.
Oh, really? That's a, oh, great. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's,
I'm going to keep a couple of myself. I mean, but, I didn't want to, I didn't know what to do, man. Everyone just was stepping on, just calling back all the time. I don't have access to a pen here.
Okay, man, I will. But,
All right,
and thank you for talking with me today, and just if you can, get those close to a mutual party or whatever. That way we'll have a little bit of something to, you know, for the children and all that, you know.
You know, I agree.
But I do appreciate you talking to me, and I'll call you back and give you my number, and you can call me.
All right.
All right, thanks.
Bye.
There you go. And he never did return the call. Or the clothes in the pictures. There was some clothes that was found a year later in the lake. So now we're going to go ahead and go into the interview with the sister-in-law of Tabby Lynn Franklin.
That's right. We're back live here on Carson's Corner. David, that's a fascinating update there. Fascinating chain of events there.
Yes, it was. And
now,
Stacey can tell you more.
Now, should we play a news clip of the investigation here?
Well, that was edited because that was something that I basically, it was her kids and how they are feeling. And there was an event that was held last year by the community, friends and family held last Christmas. And that was basically it was presents under the tree for everybody, and you know they would actually the kids would get to pick out what gifts that they wanted, and then the rest would be donated to the community there. So that's what they did. And Stacey can talk more about that because she knows more because she was there.
Absolutely.
Is she on the other end?
Yep. Let's welcome her right
to
the show right now. Stacey,
yep.
Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you,
Stacey. It's great to have you on. You know, this is really a fascinating case, and I just kind of want to just give you the floor here to just reach out to the audience and just, you know, tell the audience exactly what's on your mind after hearing that timeline that David provided.
Okay, basically, what's on my mind is that this has been the most nightmare of a journey I've ever taken in my life. Usually, if someone passes away, you have an opportunity to bury them, and you have a place to go and mourn for them. We don't have anything. We don't have any answers. We don't have anything left from Tabitha. Because of her lifestyle of going from here to there, none of her stuff can be returned or has been returned so that we can divide it among the kids. So it's a roller coaster of a journey, especially when you get leads coming in and then all of a sudden they're put to a halt. And then you get leads coming in and then again they're put to a halt. And then you see on TV where remains were found, and at one point in time there were remains found really close to where he said he dropped her off at. They turned out not to be Tabitha's, but just having to sit there and you know, you want them to be her, but then again you don't want them to be her, so you have that confusion in your own mind, you know, that you want some sort of peace and closure, but then again, who wants to find out that has happened to their loved one, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a nightmare, and it's a nightmare for any family of a missing person.
Yes, it is. Yes. Now,
What kind of roadblocks or problems that you did have trying to get her reported missing, and of course getting the Chris's place of business searched?
Okay. Back when Tabitha was first reported missing, they told us immediately. They were like, "Well, go back home, or you know, whatever. And if she calls or if she comes back, let us know." They never said, call these databases, report your loved one missing. They never said, go make flyers, pass them out, see if anyone's seen her. They never gave us any indication on what to do for the missing person. You know, when a woman is battered and beaten, they'll give you information and resources to go to after, you know, after that incident has happened. But when a person goes missing, the police don't hand you out booklets on what to do or who to call, counselors to help with the children, anything like that. I mean, would have been of, you know, some assistance. So we basically started doing things on our own. We started doing searches on our own. I started following Chris on my own. I started taping conversations with him, doing things to try to figure out on my own where Tabitha could be. I asked them to immediately search the property he took her to, because if that's supposed to be the last place she was at, I automatically assumed from watching too much television that that place would immediately be searched. Well, I was wrong. Jefferson County was saying, well, this is Coleman County's case. It's a missing person from their county. Coleman County was saying, well, this is Jefferson County's case because this is the building he took her to. So I was going back and forth from each police station trying to get someone to go search that building. Meanwhile, we're hearing all kinds of reports that Chris is painting the shop. He is laying down concrete. He's doing this, doing that. And so it was just really hard. In November of 2009, he got evicted from that place of business, and I called the landlord, who was the owner of the shop there, and asked him, look, Chris said he brought my sister-in-law there and dropped her off. Would you mind if that building is searched? He said, no, ma'am, go ahead and have that done. So that's when I called Randy Frost, and I said, okay, I've got permission for y'all to go in and search. You know, can you go do that now? So they finally did that. Also, during the month of September of 2009, Chris got arrested for DUI in Dora, Alabama. And I got wind of it, and I reported to Randy Frost that, you know, he had been arrested for a DUI, and that car, the white Cadillac that he picked her up in, had been impounded. I asked him then, I was like, please go and have that car searched. You know, if there's any forensic evidence, it'll be there, and you guys can find it. It took him a week and a half to locate where Chris had been arrested and where the car was impounded. By that time, Chris had already, he had already went and got the car out of impound. So that was a no-go as well. And then back in January or February of 2010, Chris spent, I think, 140 days in Paris, Tennessee jail, Henry County jail up there in Tennessee. And I was like, okay, here's your chance. You know, he's incarcerated. He can't just call his lawyer and be like, you know, I've got a lawyer now. He is incarcerated for another charge, for a theft charge. Please go and question him. So Randy Frost assured me. He was like, yes, ma'am, we'll go question him, and you know, as soon as Henry County gives me the go ahead, we're going to go up there and question him. Well, I get a phone call back that says, well, Henry County released him, so we were unable to question him. So it's just been one thing after the other with law enforcement. You know, these things should have been done. I don't understand why they haven't been done. And, you know, I don't know. I've read so many missing persons cases where they have such similar stories as far as law enforcement and the the struggle it's been for their family as well. So
yes, yes,
just ridiculous.
Our next guest that's coming on too. Now, could you tell us about Tabby Tears?
I'm sorry,
and
tell you
what resource?
Oh, yep. Tears. Okay, Tabby's Tears is a Facebook page that a like page that I created in order to help families of the missing. Now, I have been doing this for 4 years, where I've had people who were advocates for the missing supposedly try and help me with my missing sister-in-law, and then they have turned out to be some of the rudest people, some of them, that I've ever spoken to. So what I figured was it's going to take someone who's been through it, someone who knows the emotional turmoil, who knows the emotional roller coaster, and who knows what the families of the missing need in, to reach out to another family member of a missing person. So what I do with this page is I put up resources like NAMIS and databases that you can get your loved one into. I put out information on flyers on how to make them and how to get free flyers made up for your loved one. Also, I put up self-defense videos for people in domestic violence situations. A lot of times when a person goes missing, sometimes it is going to be linked to some sort of domestic violence or drug indication or something of that nature. So I try to give them information, resources, education, that sort of thing, in order to help other families.
Okay. Now, through our conversations that we've had on Facebook and on the phone, and you've had some tips come in and some leads, are you able to discuss those leads? Are you feel free to discuss some of those leads that you've had coming in and what problems you've had with these leads and leading to something that possibly could lead you to her?
Most of the leads that we have that have come in from the family of the person of interest, Chris himself. See, when he was introduced to us, he was introduced to us as Chris Poor. Not until Tabitha went missing did he start using the last name Chris Merrill. This man gave me every indication of circumstantial evidence of him being guilty. You know, cleaning up his car, changing his last name, refusing to give a further statement, getting a lawyer. There was no reason for me to think anything otherwise that this man had done something to my sister-in-law. There had been prior abuse. So the tips that we have been getting in a lot of times come from family members of his. And then they'll give us locations of places where he has boasted and bragged about, you know, what he's done to her and places where she may be. So, and I've tried to have the police follow up on those leads. A lot of times the police will tell me that this is hearsay. Since it didn't come directly from someone that was there at the time, it is considered hearsay. Mm-hmm. They won't search the areas because it's too deep, or it's not an exact enough area or location for them to search.
Mm-hmm.
So,
now, do you think as far as if there's anything else, I mean, besides that could have possibly made Tabitha go missing, besides the abuse, is there something that she possibly knew that, you know, she might have been going to somebody about?
It's definitely possible. One of her friends had told me, after she went missing, that prior to her going missing, Tabitha went over there and told her that she knew something about Chris and that it was going to end up ultimately causing her to lose her life. And the friend kind of persuaded Tabitha to talk more about it, and she was like, well, you know, is it something to do with the loss of another life? And Tabitha said yes. So I'm not sure, you know, I can't be positive
right.
on that. That's not something I heard myself,
mm-hmm.
but this is something that was reported by one of her friends.
Yes.
What could you,
like the cops are saying hearsay.
Mm-hmm.
Still, they should be, you know, following out these things because it could always lead to something. Is there anything else that you would like to say? I mean, I know we've only been talking like 25 minutes and our next guest ain't coming up until 7 o'clock, but is there anything else that you'd like to add to, I mean, that you'd
well,
like
David,
to say out there?
I have some questions too, if I can
yes.
fit in here. How would you describe Chris? You know, we kind of heard bits and pieces about his relationship with your sister-in-law. I know that the police only interviewed him once after this happened. And what type of person would you describe him as?
Okay. I had the unfortunate pleasure, I guess you could say, of meeting him one time. He was brought to my house by Tabitha, and immediately when I met him, I told my husband, there's something about that man I do not trust. I just felt a distinct vibe of violence or nastiness. I didn't know if he had raped someone or if he was, you know, if he hurt someone or what, but that was my immediate impression of him. The kind of person he was is from what I've gathered from his family members and from people that did know him is that he was a steroid user. He was very into his body and working out. He was also into methamphetamines and drugs of that nature. He was also into a car chopping business from things that I've heard. So, and he has an extensive criminal past. He spent 5 years in Gus Harrison Correctional Facility in Flint, Michigan, for assault with an intent to rob. So this is a man with a long criminal past, along with his family. His family shares a long criminal past with him. So, and then there was the abuse that he inflicted upon Tabby. He had started out at first, I guess it was mainly shoving, slapping, kicking, punching, that sort of thing. And she would either not come around us or she would hide behind sunglasses or something of that nature. A couple of times she would call me from their home on Muggle Loop Road, and she would say, please call the police, he's about to kill me. And I would call the police, and by the time the police would come there, either he or she would get rid of them. So there were never reports made at that time. One particular time he took her to Flint, Michigan to be with some family up there, and he beat her so severely and choked her out that she defecated and urinated on herself. When she awoke from being passed out, there were a couple other people there, and she heard the sound of a shovel hitting the cold ground. So at that time, she begged for her life and stole his car, and somehow she talked him out of killing her, and stole his car and brought it back to Alabama, parked it in the Coleman impound parking lot here at the Coleman Police Department, and went to make a report. They said because the incident was attempted murder and happened in another state, she would have to file charges in that state. So she settled for a restraining order in which he called her a month later and described to her what her daughter was wearing and said if she did not drop the restraining order, her daughter would be next. So, as any mother would, for fear of her child's life, she did drop the restraining order.
Now, was he the father or?
No.
Okay.
No. No, these children belong to another man. He does have a child, and he recently had another child with another woman in Illinois.
It's remarkable that this person, after he was interviewed by the police, what do they tell you at that point?
They told me there's nothing that they can do at this time because they told me exactly that their hands were tied, that he got a lawyer, so their hands were tied. That's when I was like, oh, no. That's why I started private investigating or snooping or whatever you want to call it and found out, oh, well, this is when he went to jail. Here's, you know, here he's in jail now. This is a good time for you to, you know, look into the car. That's when I started following and finding out things about him.
Oh.
Do you know how long they interviewed him for?
It was a phone conversation over the phone, and I do not know how long it was, but it wasn't long enough to bring him into the station, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So it was just a phone conversation. He called, or Frost called him and asked him about Tabitha, or either he called in, I don't remember, and he just said, I picked her up from Keith Floyd's house, and I took her to my place of business, dropped her off, went and done some errands. Now, she, you know, this would have been real late at night. I don't know how many people run errands that late at night,
mm-hmm.
but apparently this was his statement that he had done, you know, precisely that. When he came back, supposedly she was gone. So, and then it takes 3 months for the place to get searched. That he's going to drop her off at this place she disappeared at, and then you're going to wait 3 months to search the place?
You know, that's why do you think that the police department apparently didn't do their diligence in this case? What was it about? Because, you know, we alluded to this before, that this seems to be a common theme, David. When we have families on this program, it's usually they're very frustrated with the lack of cooperation on the part of the police department, and that's definitely seems to be the case here. Why do you think it is that the police department just hasn't done their diligence in this case?
I feel that, well, you know, at first when they were telling me that they couldn't search the building, it was a jurisdiction issue. But I feel a lot that it may have something to do with Tabitha's last name being White. Here in Coleman, you know, her family is not one of, you know, an upstanding family that the police look good upon. You know, you know, they've got their troubles and issues as well. So, you know, I feel like it may be that may be a part of it. The fact that she was a drug addict may be a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she wasn't a preacher's daughter. She wasn't a police daughter. So I don't think that they've done the work that they should because of, you know, the lifestyle she led and her family was a poor family that, you know, had run-ins with the law. So that's my
opinion. Yeah, so in other words, they in their mind, they probably wrote her off as, you know, this, that, and the other thing.
A runoff mother, you know, drug addict. Yeah, I think that they wrote her off. I think they did not do the research. And, you know, if they would have done that, they would have known she's the type of mother that even if she, with her drug addiction, she was there for her children all the time. She called her children, you know, all the time. Matter of fact, the weekend before she went missing, or I'm sorry, the weekend after she went missing, she was supposed to be picking up her children. And that was something Tabitha would have not missed out on. She would have been picking her children up so that she would have been able to have her time with them. So, you know, it should have been, you know, that should have been a red flag of foul play at that point, you know. Tabitha was not listed as an endangered adult until after we started finding clothes out of the lake. She was just listed as missing. She wasn't listed as endangered, and she should have been.
Yes, because of the abuse.
And yes, sir.
Yes, 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 exactly. Go ahead, Bob, if you have any more questions.
Yeah, I mean, and so you have a private investigator. Is the private investigator still working on this case?
We had a private investigator at the beginning of the case.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, he's had some other things going on in his life, you know, a new baby and everything. So he hasn't really been able to, and he's got other cases as well. And
right.
he was working for pro bono. We did some fundraisers to try to get a little bit of money, but we weren't able to, reimburse them for all the, scuba diving equipment and things that they put into this. So he hasn't really done that much work on her case in probably a year and a half or so. But at this time, I do have another man who has been trying to help me getting some information to me via the internet. So, and I'm not sure how that's going to go, but he's been very diligent on trying to help me. So,
yeah, and that oftentimes we see families that turn to private investigators, as the case with the Stanberry family, David. And other families, because the police departments oftentimes they have a lot of cases, and they may consider it a cold case, and therefore unfortunately it doesn't seem like they ever put the resources into this case, which is very troubling in all senses, really.
Yeah.
And what's happening with her children at this point?
Her children are there with their dad. He takes good care of them, and we try as a family we try to keep their spirits up, keep them being children. We do vigils and things like that to kind of keep their mom in the hearts of everyone here in Coleman. And sometimes it's hard for the children to look at the videos, and I had to take them off of her page because they would see that picture of her with the black eyes, and it hurts them. So we felt like it would be best to just go ahead and take them off of there. And And then they've created their own page called, it's called Missing Tavitha Franklin. And that way they can express their feelings and how, what they're going through as growing up without a mom.
Mm.
So we try to encourage, them to express their feelings as best as they can, and it's so hard. You're not given a handbook on how to do this, so it's really hard.
Yes, I bet it is. You do have, she does have three wonderful children, and it was 2 years ago when they did that birthday video for her?
Yes, sir, we do. Her daughter loves to sing, and Tabitha used to love to hear her daughter sing. So I encourage them to, do things artistically, whether it be writing things, drawing things, writing letters, singing songs, things of that nature that makes them feel better, or gives them a little bit of self, like they're doing something themselves in order to help. Tabitha's daughter likes to reach out to other children that have missing parents so that they can kind of talk and, compare their lives and things like that. So,
And can you, for people there that's listening in the archives and on the Podmatic and iTunes and stuff, what is actually, if you could tell them what the Facebook page is for Tabitha and the videos and the information on the case that they can actually look at, and what is that?
Okay, well, I have a Facebook page called Looking for Tabby, and it's spelled capital LOOKINFOR and then space capital TABBY. Also, if you Google Tabitha Franklin, there's a lot of information on there that that where we've contacted the news or we've held events or stories have been written about Tabitha or there have been other blog shows about Tabitha. So we try to, you know, keep her name out that way. So there's there is a lot of information you can find on Google as well as looking for Tabby.
Okay. I don't really have any more questions because basically Bob asked some of the questions that I was going to ask. Now, are you still looking for other private investigators to do pro bono? Because I know I contacted you, I gave you the number of one person that would be willing to do pro bono work.
I have never refused anybody's help that wants to help look for Tabitha, because the more people looking for Tabitha, the better chances we have of finding her.
Yep.
So to me, you know, the more people that want to help her, maybe, you know, someone has an idea that hasn't been resolved yet. Maybe someone has search teams that can come out here and do these searches that need to be done underwater. Maybe somebody has access to equipment that we need. So anybody that's willing to help look for Tabitha, I'm not going to turn away. You know, that's just something I would feel foolish of doing, and I would, you know, suggest any family that is missing a loved one, you know, if someone's going to offer that help, take it, you know. You need it. The families need that help. They're not going to get it from most law enforcement. You know, so you've got to do what you've got to do to bring your loved one home.
Yes. And just also to put out there, too, is there are several places where that you can go when you have someone that's involved with domestic abuse and has gone missing, and that's the DOE Network. You also have Help Find the Missing.
Sure.
And that's at, that's helpthefindthemissing.org, the missing database. And then you have NAMIS, and you also have the Community United Effort, which I'm looking at right now, and that's the NorthCarolinaMissingPersons.org. That is the, I believe it's the Q Center, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
Yes, yes. So a lot of resources there and people that do help with the searches. Now, there was one question that I did have, and excuse me for a minute. And I know that we had talked about this, and it was something that I had posted on Twitter back about a few weeks ago, to actually for people to call in to the Coleman Sheriff's Department to, you know, keep if someone was to do that, if, like, say for example, if I or other people were to keep calling the Coleman Sheriff's Department, do you think it would help in trying to get them to actually get together a team to go search or just to really start getting this case solved?
I feel like that if the more people that call in and the more people that ask about Tabitha's case, it would show the police that maybe, you know, that there are more people out there that care about Tabitha and care about her children and that she does matter, you know. So I feel like that is helpful. I think that, you know, it's the ones that don't receive the calls. It's the families that aren't able to do anything because they don't know how, that where the cases go unsolved for so many years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got to reach out to the public. You've got to reach out to everybody and be like, you know, look at this woman. Look at her with her children. Look how she is with her children. Look at the love that's there. And, you know, imagine if that was your mother or your sister or your daughter. Imagine if it was someone that you cared about. It can happen to anyone. There are so many women that are involved or have been involved in domestic violent relationships. It could have happened to any of them. There's a lot of women that have been, you know, on the wrong path and grown up around drug addiction and become drug addicts. But, you know, It could happen to them. Just because you're on a wrong path doesn't mean that, you know, that there isn't something that somebody may not help you you know, if you're given the chance. Tabitha was not given that chance. I don't believe she's still with us. I don't. Our whole family is, you know, you want to hold on to hope, but unfortunately we weren't given that option. We were never given the option of even thinking that for a minute that she may still be alive.
Yeah. Yeah. There was also one person that you believe that has some information who just recently was arrested, and who Jeremy Bova?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Was he ever questioned?
Yes, sir. Jeremy Bova is one of Chris's cousins, and he had told another cousin of Chris and his that that and I've got the statement on Looking for Tabby's page where I had spoken to the girl in a private message, and she had told me that Chris had cut off a tattoo of Tabitha's and put her in some caves here between the place where she was picked up at and between his house. I told the police when Jeremy Bova was arrested, I was like, look, he's arrested. Please go down there and have a talk with him and see what you can do. They said he didn't break, but they felt like there was something that he, you know, that there was something there,
mm-hmm.
and but they couldn't get him to crack. So they left their information with him, and he's got to sit there and, I guess, serve some time. I don't know if that's going to change his outlook on giving the information or not.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, let's hope that, you know, that through the power of prayer, that it will be on his heart to actually break and say something.
Yes, sir. That's what I also do. I try to reach out to a person, you know, to their moral standards to, you know, if it was their family member, wouldn't you want to know? I mean, like I said, I've had people pass away before, and we have grave spots. We can go and visit them on holidays or their birthdays or, you know, and go have a place to go talk to them. These children have nothing. They don't even have the absolution in their mind that their mother has passed away because they have no answers, nothing. So, you know, I know how it is for us as adults. I can't even imagine what these children are going through.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Yeah. Man, it's got to be painful for them.
But you know what? You, I think, David, you brought up a good point, and how if there is enough pressure calling the Coleman Police Department, and there are other outlets out there willing to shed some light on this case, and that may put pressure on the authorities to really properly do investigation, really investigate this case. And that's sometimes a huge challenge for families as well, because, you know, as we said, you know, the media sometimes is only interested in, you know, covering current events, you know, certainly the longer that this takes place, the more difficult it is going to be for the family, because, you know, this happened, you know, some time ago. And so that it just makes it that much more difficult. But, you know, we take it as almost a public service. We have some sort of, you know, a duty to try to raise awareness on cases like this and try to get the word out, because so often traditional media, you know, will be reluctant to cover stories like this. And so it is almost incumbent upon us to do something about this and try to get the ball rolling, so to speak.
Yes, yes.
They're one of my angels. He's one of the angels.
Yes, well, hey, you know, that's, you know, God's put it in my heart to, you know, to do this for the missing, and, you know, coming on Bob's show and sharing the cases and, you know, for these families, you know, because, I mean, it just takes, you know, it could be anything that we talk about, You know, it shows for the families that we are actually there to help support them, and that's what they need, is support, too, from people, too.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, even if it just amounts just coming on a show and just telling, you know, completely your side of the story unabated and not constrained with, you know, time limits or anything like that. And so, you know, we could certainly help out in that regard. And you know, this show, it's not going out to, I mean, it's reaching a lot of people, but obviously we can't compete with the major media markets. But, you know, in the day of the internet, you know, something like this could spiral. It's great that we see missing families congregating on Facebook and sharing links and all that stuff, because that stuff now could be passed on to thousands, if not millions, of people. I'm curious, have you ever set up a YouTube page or have any type of YouTube videos available describing this case?
No, sir. I haven't even thought about that.
Yeah, I mean that could be something that you may be interested in the future. David, I don't know if you've ever I know, David, you stick generally to, you know, MP3 recordings and whatnot, but is that something, David, that you've given a thought to putting?
Oh yes, yes.
YouTube videos.
Yep, I do have a YouTube channel. As a matter of fact, just a few weeks ago, I think it was a few days before Thanksgiving, I actually did on Tabitha Franklin and on Spreaker, and it was an interview that was done with the Missing and the Miss from Kinsley Brunn, the one who actually got me started up with my website and paid for the domain for the whole year. So, yes, they can actually go to that, and that is actually on, it's youtube.com and NDSman64. And I'm going to be actually changing that, because what I'm going to be doing is actually I'm going to be having a YouTube channel for Speak Your Mind Radio. And all of the cases that, you know, we do in the updates and you know, because I do go on occasionally, you know, and do any updates that are done, you know, that I get, that I see on Facebook or whatnot and hear about. And that will be uploaded to that YouTube channel. But for the time being, it's my personal YouTube channel, which is NDSman64, so they can actually listen to that interview from back in 2011. Correct, Stacy?
Yes, sir.
Yes, with Kinsley. And any of the other cases here that we have, I mean, there is also Selena Cass, who, as a matter of fact, just not too far from me, about 45 minutes away from where I'm at, came up missing in Stewartstown back in 2011. You know, her body was found in the Connecticut River, and still to this day, there has been nobody arrested in this case. And I mean, the mother is still. I mean, even though the assistant attorney general, she's still, you know, they're still working on this case, but nothing has come up. No new leads, no nothing. And that's one of the other ones. As a matter of fact, there's one that's just went missing in October 23rd. Excuse me, October 9th. Abigail Hernandez. And as a matter of fact, November 6th, they just released, they had a press conference. When she went missing on the 9th, the mother had received a letter November 6th. This letter was written on the 22nd of October and sent out on the 23rd, but she did not get it until 13 days later. They didn't release as to why, you know, what was in the letter, where it was mailed from, or as to why it took 13 days for her to receive that letter. But as soon as she received that letter, she turned it into the authorities, which was on the 6th. And this, she's a 15-year-old teenager, and she's at grave danger, because this, like you say, they don't know if she's, you know, if she went on her own and coerced or what. And, you know, like we're going to be talking about this next case that's coming up with Phoenix Coding, some of the similarities with how these two people went missing, even though they prefer not to associate their daughter with that, with Stacy English, because they do believe that she is alive. And I do myself do believe that she's alive. But in some cases, the way this kidnapping went, I mean, her gone missing, could be, looks like some cases of human trafficking or drug trade, you know, being taken by that.
Well, you know, it's great, David, to see that you're doing this, and you know, we all have to continue. Anything that you either of you want to say in closing as we approach the top of the hour here?
I would just like to say, you know, if anyone has any tips and they're afraid to and let anyone know about them, I mean, I don't care if you have to write it on a bathroom mirror at a public restroom. Just, you know, let us know where she's at. You know, let us know, you know, give us some peace, give us some closure. Families need that. And, you know, when I find Tabitha, which I don't have a doubt in my mind that I'm determined enough to find Tabitha, that I'm going to help other families of the missing and other women with domestic violence, because I think that's what Tabitha would want.
Yes, exactly. Yes. No, can you, there is a phone number for people that can call in anonymously with any tips. Again, that number is again?
It's area code 205-254-7777. And you can call in with an anonymous tip. They'll give you a code. If your tip leads to Tabitha being found, they will use that code to track the whatever the call or whatever. You do not have to come in for a witness as a witness or anything, and you will still be eligible to receive the reward money.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks a lot for coming on the show, Stacy. I really appreciate it.
Thank you guys for having me. Thank y'all so very much.
You are welcome. And
anytime.
Like I say, my thoughts and my prayers will be with you every single day.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Stacy.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. That was absolutely heartbreaking, but inspiring at the same time, David.
Yes.
You know, it's frustrating to hear the details of these cases, because there's so much overlap in terms of the investigation and the struggles and so on and so forth that these families have to go through in order to get these instances properly investigated. But it's good that we can provide some sort of solace at the very least to you know, individuals that have family members that are missing and whatnot.
Yes.
All right, so now we're going to take a brief timeout. And, David, do you want to explain what we got coming up in the second hour?
Yes. We have a case. It is on Phoenix Colvin. And it's been a year, 11 months, and 22 days as of today that she's been missing. And she was last seen on December 18th of 2011 at 3 p.m. in the driveway of her family's St. Louis County, Missouri home. Now, roughly 3 hours later, Colden's black 1998 Chevy Blazer was impounded by police after it was discovered about a 25-minute drive from a home at 9th Street in St. Clair Avenue in East St. Louis, Illinois. Excuse me. The keys were in the ignition with the motor running and the driver's door unlocked. Now, the parents of Phoenix and Goldia Lawrence Colvin strongly do believe in their hearts that their daughter is still alive and is out there somewhere, and that their Lord has not taken her back just yet, and that she will come home through the power of prayer, faith, and awareness to her daughter's case. Now, earlier this week, I did speak with Lawrence over the phone about the similarities with these two cases. If you could actually, Bob's going to be playing a timeline on this case here and that phone interview that we had earlier this week.
Okay, so you want me to start off with the timeline?
Yeah, you can start off with the timeline, and then we'll go into that interview.
Okay. Here is the timeline for Phoenix Colvin, ladies and gentlemen.
Good evening, and welcome to the show. I am your co-host for Carson's Corner tonight.
And we're going to be joined by the parents of Phoenix Colden, Lawrence and Goldia. Back in December of 2011, two African-American women with beautiful, bright faces and smiles went missing only 9 days apart, one in Atlanta, who was Stacy English, whose body was found January 23, 2012, under a tree in a heavily wooded area near the Aaron's Amphitheater at Lakewood, and Phoenix Colden in St. Louis, Missouri. Now, in both of these cases, their cars were found with the engine still running. Also, in both of these cases, the investigation was slowed down because the cars the women were driving had been impounded, a fact that neither police department realized until several days into the investigation. Now, it is 11 months and 22 days later, and Phoenix Colden is still missing. She was last seen on December 18, 2011, at about 3 p.m. in the driveway of her family's St. Louis County, Missouri home. Now, roughly 3 hours later, Colden's black 1998 Chevy Blazer was impounded by police after it was discovered about a 25-minute drive from her home at 9th Street and St. Clair Avenue in East St. Louis. The keys were in the ignition with the motor running and the driver's door unlocked. Now, the parents of Phoenix Goldia and Lawrence Colden strongly believe in their hearts that their daughter is still alive out there somewhere, and that their Lord has not taken her back just yet, and that she will come home through the power of prayer, faith, and awareness to their daughter's case. This episode is going to infuriate you, educate you, and make you question many things. Now, I'm going to take you into two short little interviews here.
The day Phoenix went missing was a very beautiful day. It was a Sunday, December 18th, 2011. Phoenix and I to church together that morning, and then we came home. I didn't see her leave. Her dad saw her leave. He said she left about 3 o'clock.
I figured she was going around going to the store like she would do often, or go to a friend's house.
I really, really started worrying about 12:30, 1 o'clock. The latest Phoenix has ever stayed out was about 1:30.
When Phoenix never returned home, her parents began calling family and friends. Late the next day, they contacted local police to report her missing. But what they didn't know was that Phoenix's car had been found just 2.5 hours after she had disappeared the previous day and was now sitting in a local tow yard.
The area where her car was found, we did a 4-block radius search of the area, buildings, the weeds, whatever we could search, railroad tracks, whatever was there, we searched it. And there was no sign of Phoenix anywhere. But we did search, and we've been back over there several more times searching also.
You have?
Yes, we have. We've been back over there searching. Her brother.
I wake up sometimes, and I'm calling her name. I pray constantly. Constantly. But that's a good thing, because there's power in prayer. And I know that my daughter is going to come home.
Hello, Lawrence?
Yes.
Hi, it's David. Sorry it took me a little bit long. Yeah, so. Okay, first, when you were looking into it, when they were investigating this, I mean, did they see any similarities with this? I mean, what did they say?
Well, they saw similarities in the way that the cars were found, and the way the cars were impounded, and the way that police department did not do the correct procedure when they found those vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
Those were similarities, and that there was a similarity that the guy that was visiting with Stacy English the night before she disappeared was from St. Louis. And he went to the same school that Phoenix went to.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, those are some of the similarities.
Okay. Now, I know that, you know, they ruled him out as a person of interest in the Stacey English case, but I find that very peculiar.
Yes, we did also.
Yeah, very peculiar. And can you just give me a little bit of information about Phoenix, you know, growing up? How was she? What was she like?
Oh, Phoenix is, well, at the time she was growing up, she was very, very happy, mischievous, playful little girl. At home, she would crawl up on the table and tie my shoes together as if I didn't know. She was at school. She was a very good student, but she loved to play. And after school, she would play all the time. She's pretty good at basketball. She was a very good and delicate young lady, and she didn't have any prejudices about her. She took ballet, and she studied piano.
Mm-hmm.
She's a very good pianist. We started on studying piano and ballet when she was probably 5 or 6 years old, and she became a very good pianist. She didn't stick with the ballet, but it helped her as she got older. It helped her in her fencing sport.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Uh-huh. All right. When I listened to a recent show, you had mentioned back on a show a few weeks ago, guys lived in Bakersfield. Something happened then.
She was about 4 years old. She was just learning how to ride a tricycle.
Mm-hmm.
With training wheels on it. And we were outside. She was on a tricycle, and we were outside, and she was riding. Now, we had a double driveway, double entry driveway, and you could come off the streets on both sides of the driveway, and I had a gate on the highway side of the driveway that was locked, and that's where she was riding in the double wide driveway, and back and forth, up and down from the house to the fence. And there was a car that passed by. I was sitting out there. We had some yucca plants that were enclosed in brick, and I was sitting out there on the brick when this car passed by. And I noticed it went up the street and turned around and came back towards us. And it pulled up there to my fence, and this lady started to get out of the car. But she noticed me before she got completely out of the car. And she jumped back in the car, and they sped off, and I couldn't get to her in time to detain them. But I got the license number and description of the car,
mm-hmm.
the make, model, color, and the license plate of the car. But they said they never could find the car. And at that time, there had been two or three beautiful young children. Hispanic children had went missing,
mm-hmm.
in that area, and actually one of them looked a lot like Phoenix, and I'm quite sure that these two people were going to try and get our daughter at that time if I hadn't been out there in the yard with her.
Yes, it probably would have happened.
The
reason why I asked that question and why I asked you to tell us about it is because I've seen this, I've heard of it happening, where someone tries to do an attempted kidnapping and it doesn't become successful, but years later they come back and they're successful.
Uh-huh.
So
okay.
This is why I asked that question. And
uh-huh.
Another thing is, I mean, it happened with Stacy, and the way it was is, I mean, with the engine running and the keys still in the ignition and the door open, but Phoenix, the door was unlocked.
It was unlocked.
Yes, it was unlocked, but not open. But this is, you know, and this just shows some of the signs of,
And I hope you don't, you know, take this to heart or anything or whatnot, but it sounds like a case of the, someone being grabbed to be used for human trafficking or sex trade.
Yes, either that or in the drug trade.
The drug trade, yes.
And I think truthfully that that human trafficking and drug trade go hand in hand.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. So, what do you expect or hope to expect by coming on to the show tonight?
To expect to increase awareness of our daughter's missing and the time that she's been missing, and to spread the word to get a wider audience.
Mm-hmm.
To talk about her being missing.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. We have a strong sense and belief that our daughter is alive and well.
You know, I was just going to say that too. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I
have that strong feeling too, because
just
with the similarities of the case and
mm-hmm.
and just the outlook of it. So.
I look forward to being on the program with you.
Yes. Okay, well, thank you for contacting us.
Okay.
Hopefully we can, like I say, we can at least get the information out there and get the truth
mm-hmm.
out there, too, as to everything that's going on.
Absolutely.
And we're
okay.
back live here on Carson's Corner. My name is Bob Carson. We're going to bring tonight's co-host back on the line with us, David Levitt. David, that was a conversation that you had with Lawrence, the father of Phoenix Colden. And we're fortunate enough now to be joined by, I believe, both of the Coldens. We're going to welcome them on the program right now. Hello, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thank you. David, do you want to start off?
No, actually, go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, we just heard the circumstances of this case, and obviously this very heartbreaking. To anyone out there, but just kind of, if you would, give us a recap of what happened, and then I guess we'll go from there.
Okay. Well, that Sunday, as I said before, was a very beautiful day that our daughter went missing. She left home approximately 3 p.m. that day, and at the time we didn't know it, her car was found and impounded a couple of hours after she left home, and we were not able to find the car until January 1st, and she left home December the 18th. The officer who got the 911 call that there was a car abandoned at 9th and St. Clair Avenue in East St. Louis, he said he determined that the car had not been stolen, so he just had the car towed. And from my understanding, what should have been done was that he should have notified the county where the car was registered so that the police in that county could notify who the car belonged to. It was our daughter's car, but it was registered in my wife's name.
Mm-hmm.
So it was fully insured and licensed, so it was completely legal. But that was a big mistake made by this officer, when he did not complete his duties. So we didn't know the car had been impounded, and we didn't find it until January 1st. So we lost 2 weeks of investigative time. The day after Phoenix didn't come home, which was the 19th, we called St. Louis County Police, and the first officer that came out, once he found out Phoenix's age, did not want to write a missing person report. Actually, he lectured us that Phoenix could do what she wanted to do. She had a right to be missing if she wanted to be missing. She could be with her boyfriend, spend the night with her boyfriend or whatever, or maybe with her boyfriend for a couple of days, or things like that. And that is something that she had never done before, living under our roof. So we knew there was something wrong with that, because you just don't change your character overnight like that.
No, you don't.
No, you don't. And we knew something was wrong with that. So he would not file a missing person report. But he did call and see that the car had not been towed or it was not in an accident or things like that. And he suggested that we start talking to family and friends and
yes, to hospitals and things
like
that.
And he left. Well, without him filing a missing persons report, then that just left us on our own. And we started doing what he suggested. We called the hospitals. We called families and friends. And we also, the following day, we called back to the St. Louis County Police and had another officer come out. And this time a lady came out, and she also ran checks on the license plate to see if the car had been in an accident, had been towed, and things like that. But she couldn't come up with anything. But she did file a missing persons report, and this was Tuesday. Wednesday morning, we received a call from the Missing Persons Bureau of St. Louis County Police, and we were able to speak with the detective that was in charge of missing persons. And this detective also ran the plates on the car and couldn't come up with any kind of a hit on the car. So the car was just sitting in the impound yard, and no one could find it. And that had to be because there had not been any type of report written up on the car. If it had been in the system, St. Louis County should have found the car. But they couldn't. At that point, we were still flabbergasted before we couldn't find the car, and we couldn't find Phoenix. We didn't know where Phoenix was, didn't know where no one had saw her and her car, and so we were just talking to friends and family, and my wife created a flyer, and we took that flyer and mailed it to all of our email contacts and asked them to forward it on to their email contacts. She was talking to TV stations trying to get some publicity, some coverage for Phoenix, and couldn't do it. We actually hacked into her computer. She left her computers and everything's at home. We hacked into her computer and hacked into, like we had to hack into her Facebook page and things like that. And we sent messages to everyone on her Facebook page that she was missing, and we were looking for their help to try and help find her. At that point, someone off of her Facebook page or through our emailings got in touch with an organization called Black and Missing. And at the same time, there was another organization called Illinois Missing. And Black and Missing got involved and called us, and my wife spoke with them and told them that we needed some media coverage on Phoenix. And they got involved and started speaking to local media, and that's how we began to get media coverage. The Illinois Missing, they created a Facebook page for Phoenix called Missing Phoenix Colden. And that's how we got the Facebook page for her started, because of these organizations who wanted to get involved to help find Phoenix. And since that time, we have had coverage through all of the local news media. We have coverage on Channel 5 in Atlanta. We've been on Jambalez Mitchell's show, Katie Couric, and Anderson Cooper 360. We've had some extensive newspaper coverage, even the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, Bellevue News Democrat, West End Word. We've had the UMSL newspaper do coverage, a full spread ad page coverage for Phoenix. So we have had some extensive coverage since then. And we're still looking for Phoenix. And we're looking for wider coverage for Phoenix. to keep people aware that Phoenix is still missing. It comes to a point in time where people begin to forget. They tend to go on doing other things in their lives, which you can't blame them for that. But and that's why we need to keep more get more and more coverage for her, so that we can keep her name
in the limelight out there on Facebook too.
Yes.
Now, that Facebook page, you can just type in Missing Phoenix Coden, because I know when people type in Missing Phoenix Coden, we get up with your wife's Facebook account, and then of course the Facebook page.
That's it.
So mm-hmm. So they can either go. You can friend one, and then you have a like page that you can like to keep up with what's going on with the case.
Yes.
Okay. I see.
And if anyone would like to, they can on the search engine, they can type in her name, and you will receive the coverage from the day she went missing. You will receive all of the coverage that has Phoenix has had.
Okay.
I have a question, and this is kind of real baffling to me, is that they found her car, a 1998 Chevy Blazer, I believe,
yes,
while it was running, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Correct.
And even despite that, the police officer who responded did not want to file a missing police report, considering that the car was found like that?
Well, the officer who found the car was an East St. Louis police officer. And at the time, we were living in St. Louis County. The officer who found the car said that he determined the vehicle was not stolen, so he just had it impounded.
Okay.
Now, the next day, we called St. Louis County Police, and there, the first officer that came out is the one that didn't want to file a missing person report because of her age.
Yeah, but it just seems to me that if you don't find vehicles like that running, and then you put that with the fact that you guys were contacting the police department, you haven't heard from her or anything like that. These all seem like troubling facts that would lead to a more seemingly urgent response from the police department.
It seems like that, but the officer who was dispatched to the vehicle did not know there was a missing person connected to the vehicle. We didn't know Phoenix was missing at the time ourselves, because
right,
it was such an early time after she went missing that the vehicle was found. But his problem was that he did not do his job properly. If he had done his job properly, we would have had that car that night.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of 2 weeks later. Mrs. Coleman would like to say something.
Okay. This is Goldia. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
I can hear you.
Okay. The police officer said that he determined that the car was not stolen. I would like to know, how do you determine a car is not stolen without contacting the owner? Everything was in the car, the insurance card, with my name, which you're required to have an insurance card in your car. The insurance card was in the car.
Yeah.
The insurance card was in the car, and nobody ever contacted us. So how do you determine that the car was not stolen without contacting the owners?
Yes,
that
exactly.
is a question that has not been answered to this day, and today is December 10th, 2013. How do you determine that a car is not stolen without contacting the owners? How do you say that there was nothing in the car, which is what the officer said to one of his superiors, said that there was nothing in the car, And I have a long list of everything that was in the car, including Phoenix's prescription, designer prescription glasses, her Burberry scarf, some books, a magazine, an extra pair of shoes, some candy. She had some candy, a box of candy in the car, and a Ziploc bag with some lemon slices in it, because she likes, you know, lemon heads and lemons. And I still have all of that stuff, but the lemons have kind of turned to dust. But I have everything that was in her car, but he said that there was nothing in the car.
He wasn't, no, he didn't do his job at all.
He had the car towed. That's all he did. He had my baby's car towed, and nobody ever called us to tell us that the car was there, and we did not find the car. Lawrence uses that term, that we found the car. We didn't find the car. Somebody told us where the car was. We didn't find it. We didn't know where to look. We had no idea that the car was in East St. Louis, Illinois. I made a flyer, and we were going around in areas here in St. Louis, downtown St. Louis, in the area that they call the Loop. In St. Louis, we were going around in areas where Phoenix liked to go to the really nice restaurants and stuff. That's where we were going, posting flyers. We had no idea that the car was over in East St. Louis, Illinois. On 9th and St. Clair, I don't think Phoenix even knows how to get to 9th and St. Clair Street, because you have to know where you're going. There was construction going on over there on Interstate 64. You have to know where you're going in order to get to that location. I don't believe Phoenix took that car over there. I don't.
No.
But how do you determine that a car is not stolen without contacting the owners? How do you do that?
Exactly.
Did they ever examine, the car for fingerprints or any other DNA evidence?
Lawrence?
When the car was found, when we were notified of where the car was, I called St. Louis County Police, and they put a hold on the car. And I believe it was maybe Tuesday or Wednesday when they got over there and processed the car. But when we got the car back, I saw some fingerprint dust on the driver's side door of the car, but that's all I saw. I didn't see any on the inside of the car anywhere. But I was under the impression that everything in that car should have been inventoried and bagged.
Right.
Exactly.
It was inventoried. I inventoried it. Her mother inventoried it. I have an inventory of everything that was in that car. But the police do not, as far as we know, inventory everything, because if you go back to the statement made by the officer who had the car towed, there was nothing in the car.
And my point again is that everything in that car should have been inventoried and bagged by the police.
Yeah, especially since you found it way after, and at that point, you know, it was obvious that she was missing. I mean, it just goes down to shoddy police work.
Yes.
Unfortunately. Now, have you had any type of leads? What has been the communication that you guys have had with the police departments? How has the relationship been, and how is the investigation coming along?
Well, I don't think there is an investigation right now by the St. Louis County Police. We haven't had a report from them in a long time. There were leads in the beginning of the case. People were saying they were seeing Phoenix in different places, in East St. Louis, here in St. Louis, different parts of the country, in California, in Texas, in New York, different places. They were seeing Phoenix, and they didn't pan out. So, but here lately, there hasn't been anything concrete as far as leads are concerned.
Wow.
So we don't know.
There are a couple of girls, several girls who look like Phoenix. Lawrence saw one girl over in East St. Louis. People were telling us that they were seeing Phoenix over in East St. Louis, and Lawrence happened to see the young lady one day, and he thought at first glance that it was Phoenix, but it was not. There's a young lady over there who looks a lot like Phoenix, and I have seen a young lady over here in North County, St. Louis, who at first glance, I'm her mother, and I thought it was Phoenix, and I was wondering what she was doing, where she was. It was at a store, and I thought she was at home, so I was going out, and the young lady was coming in, so I went back into the store and followed her, and that's when I realized it wasn't Phoenix. The girl is much taller than Phoenix and much thinner than Phoenix, but when I first saw her, took a quick glance at this girl walking into the store, I thought it was Phoenix. So there are young women around this in this area who look a lot like Phoenix. So mm-hmm. maybe that's who these people are thinking that they're seeing. But we have gone to Texas. We've been to Georgia. We've been to New York. We've been to California twice. Well, Lawrence went one time, and I went another time. On leads about Phoenix, and I don't think anyone, any of these people who say they saw Phoenix. You understand what I'm saying? They didn't see
yes.
Phoenix.
Yes.
Yes. I don't think they were people who were being malicious and sending us on a wild goose chase. I think these were people who were trying to help and probably saw young ladies who resembled my daughter.
Mm-hmm. What do you, and either one can answer, what do you believe happened on that day?
Well, we believe Phoenix went to meet with someone to tell them that she was not going to be a part of whatever they had going on, and they abducted her. She left our home under the assumption, under the assumption of a threat on our lives, her mother and father. And we believe that she left trying to protect us. I thought about it and thought about it and wished a thousand times that she would have had let her mother and father fight her battles for her, but she didn't do it. That's how I believe they got Phoenix, is that they threatened our lives. And that's how these traffickers and dealers get young ladies, is because they tell them about hurting their parents, their family. They tell them that they have people everywhere watching. They tell them that they have the phones, they've bugged and all that kind of crazy stuff. And I believe she was afraid for us, and she went with them.
And that's, yes, I mean, talking with you, and then, of course, hearing on a previous show what had happened to that what you stopped from almost happening to Phoenix when she was 4 years old. And looking at this case and how, and I do want to stress here too also, okay, is, you know, even though there was media made connection between Phoenix and Stacey Inglis' case, the Coldens prefer not to link their daughter to her as they believe Phoenix is still alive. And this is, you know, looking at these two cases and how it happened, okay, that's what I truly believe, is mm-hmm. her life was threatened. I mean, you know, I'm saying your lives were threatened. She was threatened also, and it had to do with either drug trafficking or something else that deals with the trafficking.
Yes.
We we have had a lead from someone that there was a threat. We have had a lead, and we have this is from someone that we've talked to that they were going to kill us. And Phoenix has left. Phoenix left home with every intention of coming back. She left home with every intention of coming back. Otherwise, we would not be able to see some of the things that we have seen, some of the clues. Phoenix, I don't think she intentionally left clues, but the things that we have found in her room, they're clues. They're clues.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a threat. It's in writing. And like I said, we've had someone who indicated that there was a threat. Well, we don't know who.
Has the authorities, you've mentioned this to the authorities.
Of course.
And they're not listening. Or are they following up with that, you know, with what you have?
We don't know. At one point, they seemed to think that what we felt was a threat, they didn't think that it read that way. And I don't know why they felt that way. They didn't explain themselves, but that was the way they were feeling at the time. I don't know if they've changed their mind or what.
Have kept saying that Phoenix ran away. That Phoenix ran away.
You know, that's
Phoenix,
the thing.
Phoenix did not run away.
No.
You know, I want to say this, and I want you to listen very carefully. I don't know why they want us to believe that they believe that Phoenix ran away, because I don't believe that they believe it. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I understand what you're saying. They're only saying that so they don't have to, what's the word I want to use? But I see right where you're coming from. They don't want to be bothered with it. She's an adult, okay? She can go where she wants.
I don't think that, because when I was passing out flyers in the community, I have met several people on the street when they saw a certain name on that flyer, the original flyer,
mm-hmm.
Their response was, oh, my goodness, is he on your case? He's the best detective they have. He will find your daughter. And these are people that I don't know them from Eve or Adam, but these are people who saw this detective's name on that original flyer, and that was their response. But he is no longer on the case. He's no longer on our case. So I to say that they don't want to do their job, I don't think that's true. I don't think that's true. I can't say that. Because that man, that detective, was working very, very hard. He and his partner were working diligently to find Phoenix. I know they were. He came over to our house one night about 11 o'clock at night. He thought they had found her. They had a picture of a girl who someone had reported seeing this girl on a bus, and they went and pulled the picture, and he called me late at night. He was so excited. He said, Mrs. Colden, I think we found Phoenix. I think we found Phoenix. I've shown this picture to the detectives in the office, and everyone, we're 98% sure that this is Phoenix. So he said, I'll come over tomorrow and let you see the pictures. I said, no, you don't have to come tomorrow. Come tonight. So he came over. He was perspiring. It was cold. He was in shirt sleeves, and he was really, I could tell he was enthusiastic about what they had discovered. And he put the pictures on the table, and I looked at them, and I said, well, where's Phoenix? He says, that's her right there. I said, oh, no, that's not Phoenix. That's not Phoenix. That's not my daughter. You know, if you don't know a person and you see someone who resembles them, I'm sure, you know, and he was really excited about finding Phoenix. He looked crushed when I told him, I said, that's not Phoenix. I mean, I'm sorry, but I know my daughter. My husband looked at the picture. My mother was present. She looked at the picture, says, well, where's the girl who's supposed to be Phoenix? I said, there she is, Mom. She says, no, that's not Phoenix. You know, but he, and he looked so crushed. But he was really, really eager, and I could tell from his demeanor and the way he talked to me and reaction to things that I was saying that he was sincerely interested in finding my daughter. And the detective who is on the case now and his sergeant, they are also. But we're not, we just don't hear from them. That's all. We don't know what these people are doing. But I can't say that they are not, they don't want to find her. I can't say that.
Well,
I'm not
saying that they don't want to find her. I'm just saying some of the things like when they say that, you know, she ran away.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? That.
Yeah.
They want it, you know what I'm saying?
They don't believe that.
Right.
They don't believe that. Like I said,
right.
I don't know why they want me us to believe that they believe that, but we don't believe it, that they believe that.
Right.
I don't believe that I don't know why they keep saying that. They're saying either she ran away or we did something to her. The utmost, Phoenix would say, Mom, that is the utmost of ridiculousness, that we did something to her. Like what? Love her? Give her everything she needed and almost everything she wanted?
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, we have not. That is totally ridiculous. That and she ran away are totally ridiculous.
Yes, it is, because I don't think she did either.
No, she didn't.
I don't.
No, she didn't, and we didn't. That's, I mean, but there are things that we found and things that we have been told that leads us to believe that she didn't, and that there is definitely a threat. There was a threat, and she evidently took it seriously, and all she had to do was tell us. But that's, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say.
Our first guest that was in on the, that was, we had on the show, she's actually in the chat room. And she's saying her heart goes out for you too. This is, I need a few minutes.
Okay.
Every day I wake up and I'm like, Lord, I go and look in Phoenix's room and I think this is still going on. This is not a dream. This is not a dream. This is not, this nightmare is, it's going on too long. My baby is alive. She is. Phoenix is going to come home. And I want everybody to pray. Pray for Phoenix.
We need to get legislation started where the local police, community police, state police can start targeting the Johns and the people who have the money in their pockets to go and pay for sex. Once we stop the flow of funds going to this sex trade, we'll stop the kidnapping of our children and the ruining of our children's future and the future of this country. The money is what keeps this thing going day in and day out. These strip clubs that are all over this country, two, three of them pile up in the same areas and so forth. These communities allow them in there. The people who, the officials who run these communities, all they're looking for is a few tax dollars. They don't care about the exploitation of our females. They don't care about the crime that comes from this exploitation, and these men and women that are in these places who go out and hurt other children and so forth because of what they're involved in. These are the things that need to be stopped in order for this kind of thing that to stop happening on a daily basis, every day, there's 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 of children in this country go missing.
Right.
That is totally ridiculous. Go missing?
And it's a whole process, too, that takes place of brainwashing these individuals, relocating them. If she is in that type of predicament, I don't know. I mean,
if she is in that type of predicament, and you know they have these girls on the streets in certain areas, in towns, and they move from certain towns to towns where they have these strips. If you know this is going on, then the police should be on that strip, and every John that comes on that strip should be chased away. If they're not chased away and they don't want to go away, then they should be arrested, and their names and pictures should be in the paper the very next day.
Yep.
That will stop the money flow from coming into that area. And once they stop it around this country, where are they going to go? They have no place else to go.
Yeah. I think the sentencing should be harsher. I think the sentencing should be harsher. You know, there are women, there are grown adult women who will gladly go into the strip clubs and do that, or prostitute. They don't have to take young girls or young boys. They even take young men, too, for this. And if they do, they are endangering the future of our country. When you take a young lady and use her body to the extent that once you let her go and she's not able to have children or have a normal life, that is a crime against our society. That should be a crime that an agency such as, say, Homeland Security should be looking into, because that is endangering our nation's future, just like a terrorist. It is terrorism. It's the same as in any other kind of terrorism. Mm-hmm. And our government, and we are the government, we the people.
Yep.
I'm sure you've heard that term, we the people. We need to stand up for what is right. We need to protect our children. We need to get back to family values. We need to get a lot of this filth that's on TV, off TV and off the movie screens. Whatever happened to censorship? Censorship was to protect the innocents. And now we don't really have any protection for the innocent. It's like anything goes.
I agree. You know, when you hear about prostitution and the different websites available, I mean, I remember a couple of years ago, Craigslist was known for having a section on its website that offered adult services. And the individuals that partake in these services are essentially continuing the human sex trafficking trade.
Absolutely.
And it's still there. It's still there. If you've been on Craigslist lately, I have been on some sites. Believe it or not, I've been on some sites looking, praying that I would not see my daughter, but someone suggested that we do this, Lawrence and I. Some of the stuff that's out there is unbelievable.
Yeah.
I'm like, Lawrence, this is a little kid can go on Craigslist and click on platonic relationship or men looking for men or women, men looking for women and all that, and see all kinds of things that they should not see until they are grown and adult. But it's there. You can go on sites and see things that should be private, nothing, it's like nothing is private, nothing is sacred anymore. It's like, what is wrong with them? What is wrong with people? What is wrong with this world?
Mr. Caldon, I want to ask you, you had mentioned that it's been a while since you heard from the police department and you really don't know what's going on with the investigation. Have you at all obtained, or are you thinking about obtaining the services of a private investigator?
We've had a private investigator that came in, I believe, in February of 2012 and did a lot of work, got us in touch with a lot of people that Phoenix was associating with that we did not know about. So he did do some work for us, but he was unable to find where Phoenix is, and if he does know where she is, he didn't tell us or whatever. But I just imagine he did not find where she is. But he did do a lot of work. He went a lot of different places, tracking down leads and so forth. But he was unable to find where Phoenix is.
The one lead that I would really, really, I would like to talk to the man myself, face to face, is the guy who set up the fake Facebook page, saying that Phoenix was his long lost daughter. That was. I would like to talk to that man face to face, because I would like to know from him where he got the picture that he used and that he doctored. He doctored a picture that was taken in our house at my mother's birthday party. I would like to know where he got that picture. And why did he doctor the picture?
So we don't have a PI working with us anymore. We had one PI, it was an ex-police officer who was working with us, and he decided not to pursue the case anymore. So we don't have any PIs on the case right now.
We had another PI as well who came forward who was going to help us on a pro bono basis. Actually, two others. And all of a sudden, they don't want to work on the case.
Mac, can you hear me?
I see. David, yeah, you're on the air now.
I'm on the air. Okay. I just overheard what you said, Goldia and Lauren. And you currently don't have a private investigator on this case.
Right.
And you wanted to know a certain thing. I have a pastor who is a private investigator, and he does pro bono work. I just tried calling him on my cell phone, but cell service here is not too good. I don't know if I can do a three-way call and be able to bring him in, but I could get you in contact with him to call him.
Okay.
He does pro bono work. He said he would do that.
Okay.
His name is Max Dabus.
Let's not give his name.
Oh, yes,
now.
Yes, yep. But he goes by a different name also. His actual real name.
Let's not give his name, period.
Yes. Yep.
On the air.
Yes, sorry.
No problem.
Every private investigator who has come forward to help us, even those who are pro bono, and the very first private investigator that we got to help us, the very first one, have all backed out. That the very first one who did a little work for us, I finally was able to get him on the phone. He would not return my calls. I finally was able to get him, and his response was, "Mrs. Colden, I can't help you." I said, "But why? I can't help you." I can't help you. Every other private investigator since then, except one, has backed out. Except one.
Except one.
Including the private investigator who I think was involved in the Boston bombing case.
Mm-hmm.
The two young men who had
yes.
the bombs at the
yes.
Boston Marathon?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Including
yes.
him.
Yes.
These people have backed out.
And do we know
out.
Why?
We don't know why. The one who I talked to, the one who I talked with, the very first one, all he would say was, Mrs. Colden, I can't help you. I can't help you.
He said
I
he
can
could
take
our
money,
but he couldn't help us.
But I can't help you.
Okay, I'm going to send you his phone number on your Facebook.
Okay.
Don't send it
okay.
to it. Don't do that.
No,
I
will give
do it
you
in
a
the
call.
Chat.
When we get off the show, I will give you a call, and I will give you his phone number.
If
don't
you...
do that either.
No?
Just send it to us on the chat.
Okay. I'll send it to you in a private, yep.
This is a nightmare. This is the worst thing that could ever happen to our family. We used to be happy. We lived a very simple life. We lived a very, very simple life. We were happy. And then there were people who came into our daughter's life and our life who were meddlesome, who everything that we, things that we were doing with our daughter, such as my homeschooling her, they saw that as a problem. Oh, you think you know more than the teachers? No, I don't think I know more than the teachers. I just want my daughter to learn the different parts of speech. I want my daughter to learn about history. I want my daughter to learn how to spell words instead of using spell check. And I want my daughter to learn about the Bible. And I want my daughter to learn about government and how this country is supposed to be run. That she will not get from the teachers in public school. So therefore, I will teach her at home. We were getting people who were just meddlesome about things that we were doing with our daughter at home, which were things that people were doing, have been doing since, since mothers have always done. I taught my daughter how to set a table. I taught my daughter how to make a bed. I taught my daughter how to keep her body clean. I taught my daughter how to floss her teeth. I taught my daughter how to be respectful to grown-ups. I taught my daughter how to clean a house. I taught my daughter how to iron her clothes. People nowadays, most people, mothers nowadays don't even teach their daughters that. I taught my daughter about sex. I taught my husband taught her about sex. That is something that God created to procreate this earth, not to be used as a recreation. That's what we taught Phoenix. We taught her that you're supposed to save that for marriage because it is sacred. It is private. It is not something that you get a video camera and videotape it and put it on Facebook. We taught her not to watch TV during the week because you're supposed to be studying, and we only allowed her a certain number of hours to watch TV on the weekend, and she couldn't watch just anything and everything because anything and everything doesn't go in our house. These are the things that we taught our daughter. And I'm praying that she is remembering everything that we taught her. The number one thing is that God loves her and that he is always with her and he will never leave her. Phoenix wanted friends. She wanted friends. And she went outside her circle. And she's very, I taught her that it doesn't matter what color a person is. I made sure that Phoenix went to, when I did send her to school, nursery school or preschool, she went to a school where there were handicapped children. I sent her there so that she could see that handicapped children are just like her, except they have some physical or mental situation that makes them special. Not less than her, but just special. Therefore, when Phoenix would see handicapped people, you know how some teenagers make fun of handicapped people? Phoenix didn't do that. Because at an early age, she was exposed to that. She was exposed to Caucasian children, Asian. One of her very best friends when she was little was a little Asian girl at church, and Hispanic girls, and Caucasian girls, and black girls, or brown girls. It doesn't matter what color you are. That's what Phoenix was taught. But then she wanted friends, and I always taught her that you seek your friends at your level and above, not below. But she did. She was able to, being a non-judgmental person that she is and wanting friends, she got some friends who were not at her level or above. And I think some of those people took advantage of her.
We're actually facing about a minute left here. If you could just give a website and give any information, any closing statements that you wish to give to the audience.
Okay. For any leads, if anyone knows where Phoenix is, all we want is our daughter back. That's all. That's all we want. Our phone number, Lawrence and Goldia Colden, you can call us, 314-653-6606. You may also call Detective Michael Moore of the St. Louis County Police. The number is 314-615-5400. You may also call Crime Stoppers, and that number is 800-222-8477. Or you may call your local FBI. All we want is our daughter. That's all we want. We're not the police. All we want is Phoenix back home. That's all. That's all.
David and Lawrence?
Yes.
Yes.
Do you have anything you want to say before we wrap it up?
No, I don't.
No, this has been kind of very, very emotional. And I will give you a call. I put that in the chat room, the phone number.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I will, as soon as I get off the phone, I will be giving him a call and to let him know. We've been talking about this case, me and him anyways, and about it and whatnot. So I didn't think there was this so much was involved. And this was quite an emotional hour.
Yes,
so,
yes, it is. It's very emotional.
I'm going to just say
every day. It's every day that it's emotional. Every single day. Every day.
I know it is for you, Goldia and Lawrence.
Yes.
Yep.
So we thank you guys for having us
and
spreading the word, helping us to spread the word.
Yes, thank you.
Yes, and you're welcome on the show anytime. In the future, please keep in contact, and we'll keep in contact with you as well.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
You're
welcome.
Take care. Good luck.
Okay. God bless.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, David. That was, as you said, a very, very emotional hour.
Yes.
And this is going to be available on the archives really forever. So it's blogtalkradio.com/Carson's Corner. David, do you want to plug your Facebook page before we wrap it up here?
Your Facebook page. You can actually, if you need to, if you want to send me a message, if you do have a missing loved one, or if you know someone who has a missing loved one and needs to, and you're not getting much media attention, you want to get out there to raise awareness, you can message me on Facebook at facebook.com/NDSMan64, or you can go actually to my Facebook like page, and that is the Missing and Abducted. I also have S Speak Your Mind Radio, the Missing and Abducted radio show, and also recent news and alerts, Help Bring Our Missing Home. And you can go right to my Facebook page, right on my profile, and all that stuff is right there. And
great.
Of course, my website is symradio.com.
Great, David. Thank you very much. We'll do it again sometime in the future.
Yes, we will. Thank you.
Take care. Thank you for listening out there.
Yep.